Chapter 9 On the Desert Road with Jimmy. One of Rob's guests, Jimmy, was travelling to his home in Pine Creek. He told us that it was in the direction of Darwin, the capital of the Northern Territory. Emily really wanted to see Darwin because she had heard it was a fun city where young people partied and celebrated after the monotony of the desert. Jimmy offered to take us with him in his car. "It'll be good to have some company," he said. "It's a long, long drive." We accepted gladly. The road was an interminable red path that continued into infinity. Hundreds of kilometers of nothing. And it was hotter than anything I had ever experienced in my life. When we got out of the car to stretch our legs, it was like entering an oven. We drove for 6 hours down the coast to Townsville. Then we started to go inland. Gradually the land became drier and emptier. We were in the outback, and there were strange muddy hills everywhere. "What are those?" Emily asked. "They're termite mounds," Jimmy explained. "Termites mix mud and saliva together. It's like cement, and they use it to build their homes." We stopped next to an enormous mound, 4 meters tall, to take a photo. Emily and I stood next to it, and we looked like ants. "It probably took those little insects 50 years to build that," said Jimmy. "There are several million residents in that house." On the second day, we arrived in Mount Isa, an industrial city in the middle of nowhere. "Most people here work in mining," Jimmy explained. "Mount Isa is the world's biggest producer of lead, silver, zinc, and copper." We stayed one night at the campsite at Lake Mundara, a big artificial lake. This is an oasis in the middle of the empty desert. Only about another 1,500 kilometers to Darwin. We left early in the morning and drove for hours through a lot more nothing. Interminable land with only sand for company. We listened to Jimmy's entire CD collection, and we slept a lot too. Travelling for so long was boring, except for the times we left the highway for the enormous road trains to pass. These immense lorries go very fast, and everything on the road gets out of their way. "We're getting close to a town, and I'm getting hungry," said Jimmy. "I know a great place to take you to." I was excited that we were finally leaving the desert. I woke Emily, who was sleeping against my shoulder, as we entered the small town of Daly Waters. It was great to stretch our legs after hours of sitting in the car. Jimmy took us to a pub with clean toilets and delicious food, obviously a very popular place for hungry, tired tourists. After a lovely lunch, we drove back to the main road. Jimmy wanted to get to a place called Lama by nightfall. But before we got back onto the main road, Jimmy suddenly turned onto a strange red road and stopped the car. We got out of the car to have a closer look. "Welcome to the first airfield in Australia," Jimmy said. "You won't believe it, but you're walking on crushed termite mounds. When they built the airfield, they didn't have the right equipment to make a real runway, and they discovered that the crushed termite mounds made an excellent landing for planes, as the grass didn't grow through them. Go ahead, look around. I'll wait for you here." As we went to explore, we heard Jimmy shout, "Don't be too long. We still have to arrive in Lama before sunset." We walked off, hand in hand. It was nice of Jimmy to give us some time to be alone and explore. Emily started telling me about her family and her past. We laughed a lot and were really enjoying ourselves. Unfortunately, we forgot the time. By the time I realized this, we'd walked for quite a while and really needed to get back. We started to walk quickly to the car and saw Jimmy coming towards us. He seemed anxious. "Where were you?" he asked. "We really have to get going." We apologized and got back in the car feeling bad. The rest of the journey was a bit uncomfortable, and I noticed that Jimmy was driving faster than usual. The desert sky slowly became beautifully red, then turned to orange, then pink, and then started to get a little dark. "How far are we from Lama?" I asked. "Well, we're about an hour and a half away, but it'll be dark soon. We'll have to drive in the dark, and I really don't like that," Jimmy answered. I didn't want to make things worse, but I really didn't understand why it was so bad to travel in the dark. And then I found out. Very soon it was dark, and we could only see a short distance ahead. Emily had fallen asleep, and I was trying to stay awake to keep Jimmy company. It was quiet, with no reception on the radio. I turned to look at Emily sleeping in the back seat when suddenly I heard a loud bang and was pushed forward as Jimmy hit the brakes and skidded to the side of the road. Emily woke up and cried out, and I felt pain in my head. I had hit it and it was bleeding. "Is everybody all right?" Jimmy asked with panic in his voice. Emily had tears in her eyes. She was in shock. "What happened?" she asked. Jimmy got out of the car and walked to something lying on the road. It was hard to see what it was. We got out of the car and went to see. It was a kangaroo. "This is why we rarely travel at nights," said Jimmy. "The kangas just jump out, and you don't have any time to react." He stuck his hand in the kangaroo's pouch. "At least she hasn't got a joey. A baby kangaroo can't survive without its mother." Jimmy got up and went to look at the car. The front of the car was damaged. Jimmy opened it to look at the engine and then got back in the car and tried to turn on the engine, but with no luck. I put my arm around Emily as we walked to Jimmy. "What can we do?" I asked, feeling guilty. "Well, let's get the car and the kangaroo off the road first," Jimmy said. "Can you drive?" he asked Emily. "Yes, but I thought the engine wouldn't work," said Emily. "You don't need to turn it on. Just put it in neutral and turn the wheel while we push it, okay?" "Come on, Daniel," said Jimmy. Emily turned the wheel, and we pushed the car to the side of the road. Then Jimmy and I moved the kangaroo off the road. We were all very sad, and Emily was crying. This was not exactly how I had planned our trip to Darwin. "We may be here for a while," said Jimmy. "Daniel, I'll need your help with the engine." We spent almost an hour trying unsuccessfully to get the car working. We had a few cups of hot tea from our thermos flask to warm us in the cool desert night. Jimmy went to the back of the car and brought out a tent. "Well, I guess we'll be camping here tonight," he said as he started to open it. "We're so sorry," said Emily. "We're responsible for this. We made you late." "Oh, don't worry about it," said Jimmy. "Everything happens for a reason. And Lama was probably a really boring place with nothing to see anyway." His optimistic attitude encouraged us, and we laughed. We collected wood and started a fire. We tried to make the most of the situation and enjoyed ourselves in the quiet night. The desert sky was exploding with stars, and we sat and watched them until we got tired and were ready to go to sleep. Sudden wolf-like sounds echoed in the night. Emily looked at Jimmy in fear. "It's just the dingoes," Jimmy said. "They won't hurt you, but make sure that you don't leave your shoes outside the tent, or you'll be walking barefoot tomorrow." The following morning, we woke with the strong heat of the sun and started to organise our things. "I need to go to the toilet," said Emily. "Well, there's no toilet in the middle of the desert, but there's a perfectly good bush over there," said Jimmy. We laughed and Emily went off to the bush. We continued to organise our things. Suddenly, we heard Emily scream and we ran to see what was going on. We found her standing, paralysed by fright, by the bush. She was as white as a ghost. A big brown snake was moving slowly by her feet, hissing at her. I was terrified, but Jimmy gently picked up a stick, grabbed the snake by the tail and held the stick close to its head so it couldn't bite him. "Wow, a king brown," he said. "This is the second largest venomous snake in Australia." "I'd say it's about 2.5 metres long. You two go back to the car while I free it." Emily and I ran to the car. She was trembling and I was trying to comfort her. Jimmy freed the snake and it moved off quickly under another bush. "Well, that was a shock for you, wasn't it?" said Jimmy, joining us at the car. "So far we've hit a kangaroo, heard a dingo, and had a close call with a snake. Things can only get better from here, right?"